the Spurs News Podcast, your home for all things Tottenham Hotspur. Now, here are your hosts.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of the Spurs News Podcast. I am Sam. Joining me today, it's not Matt. It's not Stefan. It's Polynesian Dan himself. Dan, say hello to everybody.
Hello, everybody.
So you got your own theme music now.
I wasn't expecting it. It's caught me off guard a little bit, yeah.
You just
got to feel at home.
Just got to say you're welcome. I think you've got to be a listener to this show for some time to understand why your nickname's Polynesian Dan. But
I'm still not sure if I understand why.
Do you want me to talk you through it, just in case there's any new listeners?
I was going to say, talk me through it.
So a long time ago, me and Matt were having this conversation about, I can't remember how we got there, but me playing rugby and different things and the sort of Kiwis and the Polynesian Islanders. And how basically they were all just huge guys, like this massive, massive, monstrous, muscular bang guys, but all really quite softly spoken, sort of quiet voices. And Matt then met up with you to watch a game, I believe, and basically came back and went, Dan's a frigging unit, isn't he? And I was like, yeah, but very softly spoken. And then henceforth, you were known as Polynesian Dan.
Very good. I think he's been generous, but very good.
I mean, he did say he followed you into the toilets and that was when he noticed. I don't know what that means. I never quite... Anyway, so this is the Spurs News Podcast. We are here. Last week on the show, I was chatting to Stefan and I said, oh, Newcastle away, that brings back some sort of horrible PTSD memory. I'm sure this year will be better. And technically it was. And if we follow this same track in a couple of years' time, it'll be 0-0. So, you know, thumbs up. Mate, we've got in front of us a show where we've got some questions that have been sent in. Obviously, we want to talk about the Newcastle game. I want to have a chat about season one of Ange Ball in general. But because I tend to do this where I chat, end up inadvertently answering every question, we're going to start with the questions is basically what I'm saying.
Are we going with Facebook or Instagram?
Well, hang on, I've got to play the jingle first. Hang on, come on, get with the program, man.
Now it's time for your comments from our social media.
See, I'm very professional. I got to hit the little button and everything.
Okay.
So now I say to you, Dan, Facebook or Instagram?
I will go Instagram because my favourite listener is on there.
Yes, everyone's favourite because he has his own theme and it cheers everyone up on a crappy weathered Monday.
Now it's time for a comment from my brother.
Well, I could have used this for Polynesian Dan, I guess. Okay, so Island Brother, he says, hey guys. Firstly, I shut off my stream of Newcastle when the second goal went in. Had the smell of a whooping. At 7:30 in the morning, I wasn't going to let Spurs ruin my weekend. Secondly...
Oh, wait. Where does that mean he's based? Where is he in the world?
I don't know. I just know he's on an island.
7:30 in the morning.
And the kickoff was 12:30. That's a 5-hour time difference. Everyone get on it. Track him down. Not that we're stalking you. Not that we want to freak you out. But we're basically trying to book a holiday and we're hoping you're going to put us up. No, I'm joking. So secondly, sorry to hear about the club coming after you guys for speaking the truth. Well, I don't know. I've not heard anyone talk about the seniors actually being financially strapped for money. The narrative out here is that they flooded with cash so they can't. Why can't they pay? Thank you for putting it into perspective. I guess when they used a clip for the documentary, they didn't see your logo. No. Lastly, here is my question. Could you explain the new financial sustainability rules that Premier League clubs have agreed to and how it impacts Tottenham? Keep up the stellar work and come on, you Spurs. Ugh. brutal start. So to work my way through the points, if I woke up at 7:30 or 7:30 a.m. and I was watching that, I think I'd have turned it off as well. So, you know, that's one of the worst things when I'm doing the Facebook updates. There are times I genuinely am like, I just want to switch this off. I'm done. I want to go outside. just like remind myself there's more to life than this. But there I am writing it. I mean, last year was worse, so let's look on the bright side. The aspect about the club coming for us at the moment is sort of silence on that. So we need to redesign our logo. And we've had various ideas. None of them that grabbing yet. I don't know. It's me and you really need to sort that out at some point. I don't know what. I'm still kind of in this. I almost just want to kind of blank the cockerel off and just leave it with the blue and Spurs news at the moment. Just so like, so that's gone and we'll deal with it in the summer, you know?
I guess it's a question for the listeners and people that like the pitch.
True.
What they need from a logo? Can it just be blank?
Yeah, I mean, it does exactly what it says on the tin. I don't know. Someone did email in like a kind of quite a clever SN into a logo sort of behind the word Spurs News. That looked quite good. I'll send that to you later on. Anyway, that's enough of us doing admin whilst recording. Yeah, the narrative is quite an interesting thing because you'll see it a lot in the post that, you know, I know a pensioner and he's minted, so why can't they afford more? It's like I know a millionaire, so why can't everyone spend money? It's a weird one. I don't quite know. And of course, there are definitely exceptions to the rule. 100% there are people out there who are very wealthy into their retirement. But when you look at Tottenham as an area, and you look at the fact that it's one of the poorest areas in London, and then you add to that that the people 65 and over are amongst the poorest bracket in the poorest area in London, you're literally pricing out the local fans. And I mean, it's becoming an issue, not just at Tottenham. It's an issue with all the clubs. At the weekend, Newcastle Supporters Trust joined Tottenham fans in their protest because they're having the same debate. They actually wrote an open letter to their new club owners about the price increases and how local fans in Newcastle won't be afforded to attend games at this rate. And, you know, they've been with the club through thick and thin, Newcastle especially. it's a growing trend. I know there's sort of talks between various supporters groups across various clubs about organising a protest for all fans to be involved. So we'll update that as and when. Getting copyright struck for a cockerel certainly isn't deterring me anyway. The question, can I explain the new financial sustainability rules? Dan, do you want to take this one?
No, not at all.
to be quite honest with you, they're not there yet. There are a lot of articles being written and a lot of rumours out there of what's been agreed, what's not been agreed, and yet so far nothing's actually been published with this is it. Because my reaction initial was pure anger that once again Chelsea, for example, are going to get away with it. And it just sort of, possibly the London Clear, but just Chelsea as a football club is one that I really despise. And it aggravated me a lot, especially when this week Chelsea released their accounts. I don't know if Dan, you saw this or whether anyone listening saw this. Chelsea managed to only just break the rules. Keep in mind, they have broken the rules. The current rules, as they are, 100% have been broken by Chelsea. But the way they've managed to slightly mitigate that is by selling the Chelsea Hotel, which was owned by the club, to the owners of the club, the group that owns the club. So Chelsea FC sold the hotel as part of the stadium to basically to a, like their right hand sold it to their left hand. Now, this is exactly what Manchester City have been investigated for and a far bigger thing that's ongoing. And even though that is ongoing, even though everyone knows what that is, all the details are out there of why that's been investigated and why it's taken so long, Chelsea in this set of accounts have basically done the exact same thing. It is, yeah, it's like trying to drive my head through a wall. Now, the basic outline of what has come out so far is that the clubs are willing to adjust the rules. So, in essence, it's not based on your profit and loss, but based on a percentage of your revenue to what you're spending. So, for example, your wages cannot exceed 85% of your revenue stream. Now, again, interestingly enough, Everton, Nottingham Forest and Leicester, the three clubs who have currently been charged on the sustainability rules, would all still fall foul of that. Now, Chelsea possibly wouldn't, because Chelsea have done various things in their accounts, and also they use that loophole around amortising the wages for people they signed, a loophole which then got closed, but because they did it before they closed it, they've been allowed. What I mean by that is, if you sign a footballer and you put them on a five-year contract, you can spread that over 5 years, what you've spent on that footballer in the accounts. Chelsea, everyone will notice, we're signing people on 7-8 year deals, and we were all kind of looking at it like, what? And then we found out the reason they were doing that is because they could spread it out longer and therefore meet the sustainability rules. Premier League jumped on it pretty quickly and said, right, from this point on, even if a player signs a 10-year contract, 5 years is the most you can amortise it. So if I've not put everyone asleep, apologies for going into the detail on this, basically the answer to the question is right now there isn't actually anything in set in stone. The last meeting I read that three clubs were very angry at the changes being proposed. And this tends to be not a majority wins vote. It tends to need to be unanimous. And I'm fairly confident from what I read, Tottenham and Arsenal were two of the clubs. As much as there are rivals, et cetera, they have run their club very well. They struggled when they were building the stadium, and they had to sell players constantly to keep within the rules. So from their point of view and our point of view, we've done everything right, and now you're basically saying, actually, because not many people spent a lot of money in January, it's not exciting, so we want to change the rules so we can have a bit more, you know, excitement to it, which is a nonsense. Dan, I'll bring you in on this. Obviously, there's nothing set in stone right now, but what's your feeling on the whole sustainability? Do you think it's a negative impact on the Premier League, what's going on right now, or do you think if people had stuck to the bloody rules, we wouldn't have a problem?
I think it's just a latest development, really, of a wider issue. So, sure, clubs are trying to balance the books for FFP or profit and sustainability rules now.
Yeah.
But I guess going back a couple of years to the European Super League idea,
yeah,
clubs wanted more money. And they wanted more money so that they could pay bigger wages, sign bigger players, whatever else.
Yeah.
You know, basically load the pockets of, you know, very, very rich people in senior positions at football clubs as well.
Yeah.
I guess in my mind, I'm very much conflicted in my view on it, because on the one hand, I think the Premier League's now a bit of a shambles, especially this season with points deductions and, yeah, you know, charges being brought against clubs, and then it just seemed to run on and on and on without any sort of conclusion. But I guess for the benefit of the Premier League and benefit of football, you want fairness.
Yeah.
What would be the best way to bring fairness? Is it sharing out sort of the money that's available in the Premier League more evenly, so smaller teams get a bigger percentage of the money and therefore they can compete with the top teams?
Yeah.
For instance, you're talking, you know, Nottingham Forest and Leicester and Everton, which, albeit for one or two good seasons, have in recent history been at the bottom of the table.
Yeah.
They're all struggling. They're struggling because they're trying to compete in the Premier League.
You see almost...
Part to one side that there's been an awful lot of bad decisions run by clubs like Everton.
Yeah.
So in my mind, should profit be... should the money in the Premier League be evenly split between other teams and then everybody's on a fair pitch? Then, obviously, you know, the likes of Chelsea, Man City and arguably Newcastle wouldn't be able to spend as much as they have been doing. And, you know, their situation is worsened. But then on the other side of the coin is all those big clubs have got a huge fan base.
Yeah.
If each fan were to pay £1 to watch their team on a Saturday,
yeah,
then they generate way more money than they ever get in the Premier League, you know, sharings of the spoils. So it's a real tough one. It's a real political one, I guess. So I think the whole profit and sustainability rules is just one more string to that sort of bow, yeah, which is the big clubs are arguing that, yeah, their spending and things is more than wages, etc. If they weren't part of the Premier League, then they could afford it. If the European Super League was around, then they could afford it. And that's not me trying to bring into a discussion now on the European Super League and pros and cons of it, because on the whole, I'm against it. It's just trying to have a balanced view on what's going on financially across the football world and seeing where things are developing. So, yeah, like I say, two things. Small teams aren't getting a fair share of the spoils in terms of Premier League money, and therefore, if they're trying to compete and stay in the Premier League, like Forest did when they signed about 30 players last year,
yeah,
then they're going to fall foul of the rules. Vice versa,
when
the big clubs that are falling foul of the rules, they could generate way more money if they, you know, they weren't tied to the same, you know, Premier League. So it's a balancing act, I guess.
So when you say you don't feel the clubs sort of in the lower half of the table are getting the same amount, the way the Premier League kind of operates is, you obviously, there's TV money for televised games, stuff like that, but the TV money is actually split evenly. But it's the, you do earn money from where you finish. Are you saying that you'd like to almost do like an NFL thing where the lower you finish, the higher the money you get, rather than currently where you're incentivized to finish as high as you possibly can?
I think potentially if you look more broadly at where teams finish in the Premier League, there are obviously teams that require more support in order to be able to compete with Man City's and things. So whether that does mean adopting an American style sharings of money, I don't know, but certainly something needs to give, because otherwise you will. So for instance, this season, the promoted teams have by and large stuck within their old sustainable,
yeah,
you know, finance policies, and they're all at the foot of the table.
Yeah.
I have no doubt in my mind, had Nottingham Forest not spent big last season, that they would have got relegated last season.
Yeah. Now, so from my point of view, I remember why these rules exist. These rules exist because of Leeds United. Now, Leeds United had a group of owners and people behind them who overreached massively financially and in essence bankrupted the club to the point that it nearly went out of existence. And it took, I think some, I remember reading this, and apologies if I get this wrong, it took 15 years after relegation for them to finally crawl out from the debt that they were crippled with by the owners who made those mistakes. So the sustainability rules and everything like that. Now, there are football clubs that have gone and vanished from existence. And the idea behind the sustainability rules is, you, if you stay within these rules, your football club will never vanish, in essence. Now, the competition side of it, as in we want to be able to compete, is frigging difficult. Because, unfortunately, when these rules were brought in, they were brought in kind of like after the horse had bolted. So Chelsea had a Russian billionaire come in and just, you know, spend whatever the hell he wanted on, you know, unfittered. Manchester City's owners came in and did the same thing. So basically built these clubs on the grounding. Manchester United didn't have that because Manchester United had their most successful era during the money boom in football. So again, you know, and look, everything in all this I'm saying right now is done within the rules at the time. So you kind of brought these rules in and it was a kind of a feeling like you're ring fencing the elite because no one's ever going to be able to spend to catch up with them. But the idea behind it was never about thing, you know, like we talk about fans and then the importance of fans with football clubs and, you know, going to the games, etc. Now, again, and I know this is kind of taking it to the sort of side. Now, there's a lot of people who listen a lot know I've got a rugby background. So just to step over to rugby a minute. Now, rugby went professional sort of 20, 25 years ago, if not a bit longer, because I'm very old. And when rugby went professional, far, far after football, it got some investment, it got TV deals and stuff like that, and it's really struggled ever since. Rugby is not as supported as football by any stretch. It has a very core fan base, all of the clubs do. But the clubs that were kind of, if you like, reaching, the clubs that were kind of trying to aspire to break the monopoly, if you like, have gone. There are three clubs in the last two years, called Worcester Warriors, Wasps, one of the most famous clubs in English rugby, London Irish as well. They're gone. The fans no longer have their team, and you're talking 10,000 to 20,000 fans per home game for all of these, for those three clubs. They've vanished. They're gone. Now, there's lots of talks going on about trying to merge between the clubs and trying to bring them back and all these different things, but you now go back to football, the whole idea behind these sustainability rules and stuff, so that didn't happen. Now, again, just a real dark scenario. Leeds United's massive stadium, massive club. You're talking 30-odd thousand home games, fan support. You're talking millions around the world because they were an established Premier League team from the beginning. They've got a massive fan base globally. If they had gone, you know, because of what the owners had done, that's, you know, that club's just vanished, gone. Maybe you'd have an AFC Leeds begin right the way down at the bottom, but, you know, that's all these people have lost their club. Ellen Road, all of the jobs, all of the everything to go with it is just gone. So the whole idea behind the rules is to protect that, and is also the whole, the owner's check that exists nowadays. You know, if you're going to buy a club in England, you now need to pass all of these checks. And I still don't think they're suitable enough, to be quite blunt, but that's a whole other tangent. So from my point of view, I'm kind of looking at it, you know, this season, every single member of the Premier League, as from last season, this season, you had to agree the rules. At the start of the season, you have to agree to, yeah, we know what we're doing. So if you knowingly break them, that you should be punished. Like, the point deduction thing is like frustrating to me because it's like, yeah, I can understand why that's the way to go. You don't want to just fine clubs, because if you fine clubs, then the wealthier clubs or like the wealthier owners will look at it and go, okay, well, the fine's 10 million, but if I stay up, I earn an extra 80 million in TV, so it's worth it. Whereas a points deduction actually penalizes the club for breaking the rules. So from my point of view, I was of the opinion that this is correct. This is the right way to go. But then the thing that I think's made it a mess is the fact that they've then basically turned around and sort of, oh, actually, you know, it was 10 points, but now it's 6. Or, oh, actually, yeah, it was going to be 6. And, oh, this club made the same, basically broke the same rule, but we're only going to deduct 3. So now I feel like you're in an absolute state because Everton have got every right to be screaming because they were deducted X amount of points, then it changed, then someone else got charged and they got deducted a second amount. So these clubs do have every right to be livid. But from my point of view, and just being a Tottenham fan for a moment, it is frustrating that we as a club, in a lot of ways, you know, you can argue that Daniel Levy wouldn't do it anyway, but let's just park that. We as a club have limited everything we've done at various occasions to stay within the rules, built the stadium, done everything right that you're supposed to do to grow your club organically, to grow it revenue-wise so you can compete. And yet, why should we now be at a disadvantage to another club that breaks the rules? So that's kind of my perspective on it. Do you see what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, as a Spurs fan, you'd imagine all clubs in the Premier League had the same information that Spurs had, Daniel Levy had, that these rules were going to come in. And you probably had a couple of years to prepare for it. So with Spurs, obviously, we didn't put any money into the squad for a number of transfer windows.
No.
We piled money into the stadium. We probably could have signed better players. I think
As much as I hate to say it again, Arsenal went through the same thing. You know, as much as they are our rivals and we want to kind of talk shit about them, they went through pain for years without being able to sign anyone and everything to stay within the rules, to build themselves to the point where they are now and they're competing. And it's taken them longer, but it is doable. Do you see what I mean? It's like the aspect of we want it now because Chelsea got it now, Manchester City got it now. Then if you look at Newcastle's situation, Newcastle are now frustrated. We got all this money and these owners. We want to do what Man City did. We want to do what Chelsea did. Well, it's going to take you time. You're going to have to build it gradually. You're going to have to do it properly. And I don't, like, for me, and it is just me, I don't see a problem with it. I do understand the argument that they're coming back with that, oh, it's not as exciting. But, you know, Newcastle United live and breathe that football club. You know, the fans up there. It is that city, it evolves around that club. Just imagine those owners look at this and go, oh, they're not letting us do what we want to do. We're going to pull out. And that club just folds, which is possible. You know, would any of them be mad? You know, it sort of drives me insane, this kind of football fan mentality of we should just keep spending. Oh no, my football club's now going under. Whose fault's this? Well, hello. But anyway, that's kind of my...
Yeah, I guess just going back to my point was very much when we were probably at our best under Pochettino and had our best chance of winning things, we were still spending within our means.
Yeah.
Because we knew at some point, you know, push would come to shove and something like this season where points deductions would be inevitability.
Yeah.
Had we spent more and signed better players like Sadio Mane or Zaha, whoever it might have been at the time that we were going for on big wages, we might have won something. Potentially, we wouldn't have lost players like Kyle Walker, who sort of doubled his salary overnight by moving from us. So there are frustrations of being a Spurs fan and thinking, well, if they're not actually going to be strict with the rules and you know, keep them as they have proposed for the last sort of 5-10 years, then what was even the point in it in the first place?
Yep. No, that's it. That's where I'm at. Okay, we're going to move on to the next question. Michael Jasper Ennis says, after reading the knee-jerk reactionary fan comments after the game, it got me thinking Newcastle had a game plan. They executed perfectly. They knew how to deal with the pace of Van de Ven, which we saw in the first two goals. He slowed down too much for the third. The team couldn't play out from the back nearly the whole game and didn't know what to do about it. When Royale came on, you could see he was telling them to get forward so he could pass to them. It's frustrating. I'm not a fan of people saying we have no plan, but we did look like we had no options when we got pegged back. So here's my question. From some of the most ridiculous comments, which one do you think is the most sane? Number 5, Timo Werner is not a Premier League standard. Number 4, we need a whole new midfield. Number 3, we have no plan B. Number 2, you need to sell Son, he's not a striker. Ooh, Dan, this could get controversial. Number 1, sack Ange, this isn't Scotland. Yeah, I saw that one a lot. Oh, cracking. So yeah, that's the question. I'll let you pick one. Which of those 5 do you think is the most sane?
The most sane.
Yeah. I'll give you a get out. If you think all of it's a bit reactionary nonsense, you can say that.
I don't want to go around the rabbit hole of the plan B thing, because I very much agree with you that if your plan A is good enough, then you don't need a plan B. But I guess that would probably be the most sane of the five.
Yeah.
We have a style of play which we're trying to execute, and if for whatever reason it doesn't work, i.e. The players haven't turned up that day, or you know, maybe you have been out fault, potentially, that'd probably be the most sane. Yeah. Just on the Newcastle game, I actually feel like it was quite an unfair scoreline, but
We shall come on to that in more detail. Let's just finish up these. Sean Palmetto says, "Hi Sam, sorry I haven't chimed in lately, but we've been spending most of the time with the anonymous Spurs anxiety group." Nice. It's not anonymous now, you've just outed them. First off, where has our pressing gone? Forcing turnovers and sending the ball forward. Second, creativity in the midfield has disappeared since Christmas. And third, why do we look like a team that's tired and out of ideas? There's no real excuse because we aren't in any midweek matches. I think I can kind of answer that. So the pressing and the tired thing and the kind of is kind of hand in hand. The creativity thing is, start of the season, we relied heavily on Maddison. Those opening 10 games, he really was kind of maestro pulling the strings. I mean, his injury was quite a serious one, and he's not found the same rhythm. There's like, I personally feel you're starting to see it in like larger periods in games, him getting on the ball and doing something, but he's not really been the same player since coming back. I think he's struggled to find his rhythm, and I think the team have kind of, we were so disjointed for a while with this player in and out, etc. We're also struggling to find that same rhythm just as a group. The interesting the thing about the sort of looking tired when we've not had the midweek games, I think one of the things that we kind of all need to appreciate is that the club is massive, massive change under Ange. So new players come in, or players who are at the club existing, this is a completely different way of playing. And a lot of them had to have had injuries and are sort of in and out. And then the ones who didn't have had to play in and out, different positions, sort of covering. You know, we had a good couple of games where we had Davis and Royale, our substitute fullbacks, playing central defence. I think also with this kind of system, Ange would like to have fullback options he could rely on to play his style more. I don't think he feels Davis and Royale can play his way to the level that Udogi and Porro can. And so they've not been rotated, really. If they're fit, they start. And I think, if again, you look back to the system under Pochettino with us, which was very, very fullback reliant, a different way, but very fullback reliant, he did try and sign players. I mean, he signed Davis and he signed Trippier, for example, to rotate. And he did do that regularly. And it did work, because then you saw the best of the players. I mean, you did have the established ones you felt were the best, and for the big games, they typically started. But if they were fit, obviously. But you did rotate a lot more. We've only played like a 41-game season come the end of it. So you just generally, I think the rhythm, etc., is the problem. Like, we don't play now until Arsenal, which is a week Sunday. So it's a long break now. Now, Arsenal play three times. You can argue this both ways. Surely they're going to be more fatigued. But from my point of view, they're going to be in the rhythm. They're going to have momentum. We're going to be cold. It actually makes me more nervous that we're not playing like that amount of time. They've got three games. So they're still going to be, you know, full bore. Think about the start of a season. Every team looks rusty. Every team looks out of it because they've not actually played competitive football for a while. And then, you know, after a few games, everyone's kind of into it, and you see the league kind of make more sense and teams look that bit sharper. So it does, I do think more games breed sharper. I just think we've had one of those seasons where you started really well, really settled team and balanced, followed by injuries, and then it's just never really got back to that. But I do also think just the style of play that we have now with the pressing, etc., they're just not used to it yet. But hopefully next season they will be. Anything you want to add to that one, mate?
Just, I guess, echoing those thoughts. You'd hope that the core of the players that are in the team at the moment are retained for next season, because I do think there's an awful lot of talent there. And then you'd expect next season, they've had a full year of the Ange ball, I guess.
Yeah.
And therefore, they'll be better suited to it. Potentially more games and things might cause other issues like fatigue, but at the same time, you know, they're well accustomed to what they need to do, where they need to be, and the style of football that they're going to play.
Agreed. No, I'm with you. Question: Barry Fowles sent in. Now, Barry, you basically asked a similar question around the sustainability rule, so I've answered that as best I can at this time. But you did also say, I'm now less convinced about Werner every time he misses a decent chance. I kept that because I just thought it was interesting. Dan, me and you talk about Werner quite a lot because he was a player me and you kind of spotted years ago, and we're like, oh, why didn't we sign him for this money? And we didn't. But it was more just kind of, he was a great finisher at some point. He's not now, but he is rapid, does cause problems, and does, you know, again, the stats don't lie, is contributing a goal contribution via assists, obviously, mostly, on average, since signing for us, one every two games, which is kind of what you want. Now, I personally do not feel our attack is firing at all. And listening to Ange, he agrees. He doesn't feel that it's firing really at all. And he says this is like something that really needs to improve. I think we all look at that and go, yeah, definitely. what do you think about Werner? Because for me, I think signing him to replace Brian Hill in the side, in the squad, makes perfect sense. I know his finishing is not what it is. For me, I'd almost encourage him to less, you know, just focus on assists. The occasional back post tapping, he seems to be okay. But what do you think? Because it seems to be a real hot button topic again at the moment.
I think if you take him for what he is, he is extremely effective at what he does.
Yeah.
So, huge pace, extremely one-dimensional. So, I am one of probably Kulusevski's critics in that I know exactly what he's going to do every time he gets the ball, and teams have found him out. I guess when you are defending against Werner, you probably know he's going to take it to the byline, he's going to cut it across with his left foot, hard and low.
Yeah.
But it seems to work. Like you just said, his assists have been really, really, really good. He scored a couple of goals. Probably should be more if he could actually hit a, you know, cow's ass with a banjo. But yeah, he's very, very good at what he does and has been a very good signing for Spurs since January. Is he better than Son on the left? No. Is he better than Richarlison in the middle? No. So you'd imagine, fully fit squad, Son returns to the left, Richarlison comes down the middle, you probably keep Johnson on the right because he's in very good form.
Yeah.
Do we sign Werner for sort of 15 mil? Why the hell would you not?
Yeah.
It gives you a great option from the bench. Are there better options out there? Yeah. Is he in the top 10? Sort of attacking forwards in the Premier League? Absolutely not. Is he in the top 20? Probably not. You know, would most teams choose him in a starting 11? Oh, sorry, most top 6 teams? No. Would most teams have him as an option from the bench?
Yeah.
I think absolutely they would. Why would you not have that pace and experience? And as you say, a goal involvement every... Is it every other game?
Yes. It's average. It was one in two dead on. It's now slightly more than that, you know, like 1.24 or something like that, because he's gone a couple of games about. But what is interesting to me is, like you just said that about, you know, is he in the top 10, top 20 and stuff like that. Look, statistics aren't the be-all and end-all, we know that. But Johnson, like, just for a moment, this season there are three standout teams in the Premier League: Man City, Liverpool, and Arsenal. Okay, so if we just park them over there for a moment, because their players and their stats are heightened, let's say, they're over there. Johnson and Werner, since January, okay, so when Werner joined, are up there with assists. Like, they're literally, I think they're 2 and 3. I think it's 1 and 3. Johnson, I think, is top and Werner's third. So, contribution-wise, is exactly what you want. But it's like one of those things, and it does get in your head, because it's interesting. Like, Werner, because of his pace, gets himself into positions where you look at it and you go, you should score. But without him, that doesn't happen, if that makes sense. Like, it's his pace that does that. And if he did score those goals, he's a 80 to 90 to 100 million pound forward. He's the sort of money Chelsea paid for him all that time ago. If he does score, because he gets so many chances. I think what we have to do is almost go, he's going to get those chances when he plays. He's probably not going to score that many of them, but he is also going to contribute assists. When you lose a game and he's missed chances, you want to, like, you know, drive your head for a wall. You're angry about it and useless. When you've won a game and he's missed chances, it's comical. It's like, well, he got 2 assists in that game, but he should have had 5 goals. You know, it's just kind of mad. I don't know if that is... I don't know. I don't know if you can get that mentality where you kind of just got to accept that he isn't a natural finisher, or he's in his head about it now. Because he was at one point. When he was, you look at his goal record going back, he was flying for years, then Chelsea bought him. I just look at the theory that for the money that he's available to us, his character, he seems very settled, very part of the squad, and seems to really like that he plays Ange ball, if you like. He's very part of it. And if you work on the theory that Son is our first choice wide left, Werner is our second choice, for me, is a much, much better rotation substitute option than Brian Hill has been or will be.
I'd agree with that. What I would also add, going back to the Werner thing, is I think most would agree that Werner isn't... He doesn't seem like a natural footballer. Yeah. You know, the sort of easy finishes and things like that he misses, or, you know, the amount of goal score opportunities that he's missed that somebody like Son would took away in his sleep.
Yeah.
Makes you think that maybe somebody like Brian Hill is actually probably a better footballer. He's probably got better control, better dribbling. He's probably a better finisher, even though based not on absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
But just nowhere near as effective. That's the best thing about Werner. I think you could say the same about Kulusevski. Probably a way better all-rounder footballer. Yeah. But what he actually does well, Werner... I don't think there's many better than him in Spurs squad. No. That's why he's in the starting 11 every match, because he will get to the byline. He will hit a hard low ball in,
which is what we're aiming for.
So many times since January, it works.
Yeah, I mean he's leading the because here's the other thing. Like you said it to me, and I couldn't believe it. The Premier League don't count own goals as assists, so technically he would have 2 more in the Premier League stats. So it would be, you know, probably over every 2 games, but. Anyway, moving on. Ryan Miller says, is there any early transfer speculation at the moment, and how will we manage the homegrown quota for next season? Ryan, I don't know whether you've been prompted for this, but thank you. Next week, because we don't have a game, me and Stefan are going to do a show purely about the squad. So we are going to talk purely, this is the squad, and we're going to do it goalkeepers, defenders, midfielders, attackers, and walk through each department with the rumours that are there, what we think, you know, okay, we've got 4 goalkeepers here, what we think about this, what we think about that. Talk about it in context with the rules, because there have actually been a few changes to the rules and homegrown players, which little tweaks and little things that I thought we were okay on and now we're not. I'll just give you the one example now, I'll discuss it next week, but Papa Matasar is not going to be classed as homegrown, which is frustrating because the club tried to do it, but the slight adjustment to the rules means because of when his birthday is, we miss out. Whereas Arsenal did the same thing with Saliba and he is now classed as homegrown. Very annoying. It's like a little tweak in the rules. but it's what it is. You just got to deal with that. So yeah, it is going to be interesting. The squad does once again require homegrown added to it, but more than that, it requires club trained players adding to it, and that's an interesting one. So yeah, so next week's show, because there's no game, we thought it'd be a perfect opportunity to do that, go through any speculations there. So that is next week. So thank you, Ryan. That gave me the perfect chance to promote it. Tom Perks says, asking this question before the game on Sunday, please tell me Arsenal did us a favour against Villa. No, sorry, Tom. Arsenal succumbed to Aston Villa's superior counter-attack. Good evening. Matthew Fleming says, not a question, but just want to highlight the incredible moment from Martha Thomas, and what was the most satisfying on Sunday was seeing the women's team having such a similar style of play to the men's, playing calmly out from the back. Yeah, Tottenham women have made their first ever FA Cup final after winning their first ever FA Cup semi-final at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. We covered the game on the page. I watched it start to finish, including extra time. I felt they looked a little bit nervous early on. I think the occasion got to them a little bit, conceded a pretty good goal, a hell of a strike. But then as the game wore on, looked better and better, and I think, you know, deservedly went through. Did you watch it?
I was out all day, so I did not get a chance to watch it. I obviously have seen it, and congratulations to them for getting to the final.
Yes, Wembley.
But it's, I guess we're talking about the women's team and how well they're doing. But again, perspective is like the key thing. Where they were 4 years to where they are now is huge.
Yes, man. We were chatting about it in our group chat, because it's kind of crazy to us, because our podcast has been around for a while now, probably longer than I want to think about. I think 2018, it was the 2018 World Cup in Russia. I think that was it. And we started that summer. And the following season, we got involved in following the women's team as well. They weren't in the WSL at that point. And we as a podcast actually sponsored two footballers in the side because they were semi-professional. So that would have been sort of 2019. So I think that would have been 2019-20, so the year before COVID. And then obviously COVID and everything happened, or it might have been the year before even. But yeah, you know, but when you think about it, from there to here, the club have just grown, and they've done brilliantly. It's kind of crazy, you know, the first ever FA Cup final in the club's history. They will be playing Manchester United, which is a bit of a bastard, because probably one of the best players in the Tottenham side on loan from Manchester United and now can't play in the final. So that is aggravating. I wonder how she feels with that, by the way. Can you imagine that? Like, you're on loan at a club for an entire season, you've made the final. I mean, don't get me wrong, it'd be a weird thing, and I do know why you don't play against your parent club, because that's a weird thing, but that must suck, mustn't it? She must have been watching that game afterwards thinking, please, Chelsea, please win. Yeah, so that is a shame. But yeah, it's going to be a great occasion. We don't have a great record against Manchester United women, but hopefully, you know, it's a one-off game. Who knows? We'll see what happens. And Wesley Sudama basically echoes. He just wants to talk about Tottenham women and what a wonderful achievement it was. Fantastic journey getting to the FA Cup final for the first time. So that is all the comments and the questions. Thank you to everybody for sending them in. I will put a post on Facebook and across our socials for people to put together any comments or thoughts they want to share with regards to the squad for next week's show. Dan, obviously you'll be invited to chime in as well. Normally you just want to sell them all from memory. Here's a list of 40 players, and 25 of them need to go. It could be fun, actually. You should do that. You should put together the list. I've got the squad written down. I've got the full squad, all the ones that are out on loan that are going to be coming back, everything. So I'll let you have a look at that.
It's probably for the best that I'm not invited to that podcast.
Yeah, it's a 5-hour show. So the Newcastle game then, just in a little bit more detail, we got thumped 4-0. We made it to the point that last season we were 5-0 down without conceding and then still lost 4-0. That's kind of insane statistics. We lost 6-1 last year, so we are improving marginally. Mate, is it safe to say that we can completely blame it on that kit, we burn it now, and we move on?
I think pretty much we'd all said that we hit the kit.
Yeah.
It's awful. I think within like 2 minutes of starting, I thought there was a bit of a kit clash, but it didn't seem to affect Newcastle. So,
no.
can't be that much of a problem.
The official, I hate it. Sorry, no, I was just going to say the official colour of the kit is taupe haze. And I saw someone put on there, it's like, I really want someone to score in that kit, like a sort of worldie, so I can say put it in taupe bins. And I was like, wow, you're going to be waiting a while. We didn't even look like scoring. Sorry, mate, you were going to say something before I cut you off.
Yeah, I very much dislike the kit. I don't think I've seen somebody wear it. Are you a fan?
No.
Who's buying that kit?
Stefan bought it, just so you know.
To burn?
No, he liked it. He said he liked it, but he's gone very quiet now. I just don't know what it is. There are certain... I don't know why, and don't get me wrong, I get it. I've been kind of critical of Nike in their cookie-cutter kits, and I know our home shirt's white. There's not a massive amount you could do, but at least try and do something, you know? Just... And our colours are like white, navy blue. You know, there are Tottenham colours and yellow. Like I grew up, our away kit was always yellow. I don't get where this sort of taupe haze thing came in. I quite liked the green, you know, the Champions League semi final green. I still think if we wore it in the final, we'd have won. but it's funny because I think kits, you can look at them and hate them. But then if you play really well and you create memories in them, you then love them. The perfect example for me is that home shirt that Under Armour did with like the seatbelt strap across it. When I first saw that, I thought it was the worst thing I'd ever seen. And then we're about 10 games into the season playing the best football I've seen league for, like in a long time. And so therefore I rushed out and bought that shirt because I wanted it to own it to commemorate the memories of that season. It was kind of crazy. And then there's other shirts you sort of look at and it's like, and like I said, that green shirt, for example, you know, green, not really a Tottenham colour. I don't really get it, but that shirt will now forever be one of my most prized possessions because of the memories of, you know, reaching that Champions League final. Probably one of my greatest Tottenham supporting nights, you know, when we came back to beat Ajax, it was crazy. Still can't believe it happened. But the taupe haze, I think now, please, anyone at Tottenham, whatever the deal is with Nike to wear it X amount of times, just turn around to them and say, look, we've wore it a few times. We're done now. No more. We've got a nice blue one that we'll wear for away, for clashes. Taupe haze is going in the bin. Or like a ritual burning to get rid of the 4-0 defeat. Just get rid of it. Overall, there isn't a lot to say about the game, but I think there's one thing I want to touch on because it leads into the larger Ange Ball thing. Our possession stat, I think, for the game was in the 70s, 70% possession. And we lost
73, yeah.
Yeah, and we lost 4-0. There's that Jose Mourinho thing that comes back to me all the time. It's like they can keep the ball if they want, they can take it home with them. I'll take the 3 points. Possession for possession's sake is useless. You have to do something with it. You have to have cutting edge. And for too many weeks now, I've felt, and I think possibly you'll agree with me, we've looked like we're trying to walk the ball into the net. We were kind of... It's like the attacking part of our game just isn't clicking. Like, we can look very controlled playing it out. The midfield can look very controlled at times. But then when we're attacking, it's like, oh, we're just going to slow up, pass it backwards again, pass it to the side. Okay, we're going to try and work an opening. Now, I get sometimes you've got to be patient, and that's fine. But also, you've got to be trying to thread the ball on occasion. You've got to take a chance. You've got to, like, go for it. And we did kind of open them up early. And look, goals change games. Werner scores, Son scores. the game's completely different. We know that, and that's fine. But we just didn't look, to me, on that day, no matter how much of the ball we had, I never felt we looked dangerous. But every time Newcastle came forward, I felt we were going to concede. That's a bizarre thing. And it's not the first game I felt that way. It kind of brings us into the Ange ball larger thing, because there are lots and lots of sort of fans almost feeling that it's not working. I can completely understand an angry reaction to a 4-0 hammering at Newcastle, 100%. I walked away from that feeling very angry, very annoyed. I know you were. I know Stefan was in our chat. Poor lovely Laura reading all the way through it, thinking, wow, they're having a bad day. I just look at it. I tried to step back as quickly as I could to try and go, do you know what? We're fifth. At the start of the season, with a new manager completely changing the style, completely overhauling the squad, losing the club's greatest, probably the greatest ever player, but more than just the club's greatest ever player, a goal scorer who basically guarantees you 20 to 30 goals a season. We've not done badly. You know, like, this is actually not bad at all. So I did a little bit of research, Dan, if you would be kind enough to indulge me, and then I'll bring you in for your thoughts, okay?
Sure, yeah.
The three standout clubs this season have got established coaches with established style of play that play their way no matter what. So similar to Ange. And that is, of course, Man City, Liverpool, and now Arsenal. They are the three standout teams in the Premier League. I don't think anyone can debate that. Each coach of these teams have been established in the side for different lengths of time, but they all have built and have been given the time to build the squads to play their way, making some adjustments. This is Ange's first season, so I thought it'd be interesting to go back to take a look at the first season of each of these coaches in the Premier League, the first full season. So Pep Guardiola, in his first season, this is obviously a full season, 38 games, he won 23, drew 9, lost 6. They scored 80 goals, by the way. Aguero got 39, so fair play to him. Conceded only 39. They had 78 points, and they finished that season third. Just because I want to say it, we were second. And we were like 6 points above them. Just to put that out there. Just because I want to say it. So they finished third. Interesting, just a little note to go with it. In his first season, he did spend just over $200 million on transfers. And the summer going into his second season, they spent $330 million. So again, a little bit of perspective for that. Jurgen Klopp's first season at Liverpool. They won 16. They drew 12. They lost 10. They scored 63 goals, conceding 50. They finished the whole season on 60 points, and they were 8th. Mikel Arteta's first full season at Arsenal. They won 18, they drew 7, they lost 13, they scored 55, conceding 39, finished the season on 61 points, and again, they were 8th. It's worth noting with him as well, he actually joined them the previous January. So he had that time plus the pre-season before his first full season. So they had that little bit extra again. Obviously, that's over 38 games. Now, this is Ange's first season, and we've played 32 games so far, so there's 6 to go for us. But currently, we've won 18, drawn 6, lost 8, scored 65 goals, conceded 49, and we're on 60 points. Now, I've just given you all that. Where's your head at?
I guess going back to our pre-season predictions, nobody expected us to be as high as we are now.
No.
So, but suffice to say, he's done a good job. And comparing to other top managers in the Premier League, their first seasons, you know, he's probably up there, if not more so. I mean, you know, aside from Pep,
yeah,
We're not going to get 70. You said it was 78 points he got in his first
78 points, yeah, in his first season. Yeah.
We're not getting that. We'd have to win every one of our remaining matches. But
yeah,
he had inherited a much better squad, so yep. That's by the by. I guess for us, that's away from a moment and just think about style of football. Generally, we are seeing way better football than we'd experienced in the past, what, four seasons?
Yep, I'd agree with that.
And that is pretty much all I was hoping for when we were looking for a new manager. Just bring back a style of football that I'll actually enjoy watching. And pretty much that's been the case, despite losing 4-0. I wasn't ready to turn off the TV. I guess if you'd have asked me at the start of the season, would I have predicted us to be where we are? Absolutely not.
Do you want to hear something funny?
Yeah.
You know, we did make predictions at the start of the season.
Mm.
Do you know where you said we'd be at the end of the season? What you predicted our league finish would be?
I don't know. It's probably fifth now, having said that.
Dan predicted fifth.
Yeah, there we go. Okay.
The pain of me remembering to look this up. You predicted Richie would be our top goal scorer. Matters would be our top for assists. Matt said fourth. Laura said fourth. Stefan said fourth. I said sixth. And then there's a note saying I think eighth, really. Several listeners as well. Barry Fowle said fourth. James Campbell said second. Tom Perk said fourth. Sorrel Church said fifth. Island Brothers said third. Everyone, see, it's funny because my perspective was, and our conversations were very kind of like transitional season, you know, I'm just hoping to see better football, really. But yet, when we came there doing our predictions, we were obviously, we were a little bit more kind of optimistic, I guess.
I think every fan is that before the start of the season. And yeah. Quickly dwindles to just stay up in the Premier League.
True.
I think Ange's done a good job. I don't actually think there's any Spurs fans out there that truly believe Ange out. No. I'd hope not anyway. I think that's just reactionary after a defeat that people put that sort of thing on the internet. I guess going back to the Newcastle match, I honestly thought we were well in the match. I felt it was a little bit basketball in its style. There didn't seem to be that much control. Possession stats might have been influenced by the fact that Newcastle were 2-0 up and they were quite happy to sit back at that point.
Yep.
I'm not sure if that is actually the case, but it seemed in the first half that it was a bit end-to-end. Obviously, Werner had a couple of chances. We could have been in the lead. I think pretty much we all knew that Newcastle's front three and potentially Bruno Guimaraes in the middle were going to be the ones obviously to be worried about. And, you know, I think, I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I sort of predicted as much that, you know, long balls over the top would be our undoing. I just didn't expect Mickey van der Ven to have such a horrid game, considering he's been so good at mopping up the top.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's one of those things where it's going to happen. You know, we've all seen it. Some of the best players in the world have a bad day, and against Newcastle, he had a bad day. You know, at some points, I think someone put, he looks like he ain't got any studs in his boots. It's like, it's just one of those things. It went wrong there. Like for me, I guess at the time, pretty annoyed because I wanted to go out there and get a bit of revenge. And at the end, it's just like we just got mauled again. But like I said, taking a step back and just kind of being calm about it, I'm fairly relaxed. We're in fifth. We're fighting for fourth. It was a real bad day for us. But it happens. Aston Villa have been phenomenal this season. Like, really, really good. And are well deserving of where they are in the league. They've built a good squad, a really good, smart coach. They've done great. But we went there and we hammered them 4-0. And we deserved that score. You know, we deserved it. We played really well. They had a bad day. And they did have a bad day. Like, there were players on that pitch that day that must have come off thinking, what the hell has gone on here? You know, we've played so well all season. Anyone who watched them play Arsenal yesterday, they were so good. And it was basically the same side. Football can just have mad days sometimes where shit just doesn't go your way and it just doesn't work out. And yesterday, Aston Villa proved just how good they are and just how good a result that was for us. On a different day, Werner scores one of those chances. We open them up and we're 2-0, 3-0 up against Newcastle at their ground. And, you know, goals change games. They scored their first two in within 2 minutes of each other, like, I think 1:40. And that was it. The game was gone. Like, our heads went. And I think that's where Ange will... not worry, but probably that's where he'll be focusing. To kind of, look, sometimes football can be mad and you can go a goal or two goals down like that. You can't, you know, you can't then just shut off, you know. I think it was about 38, 40 minutes in when that happened. There was a whole, you know, that we were more than capable of coming back in that game, the second half. But we just didn't. We just looked kind of like, oh, no. We're losing the Newcastle again, not again. It just never seemed to recover, and I think that's where I'd be focusing. What do you think to now this massive break we got just because of this stupid way the fixtures have laid out? Do you feel that who's got the bigger advantage? Like I said, Arsenal play three times before we face each other. We don't play at all now. I'm really on the fence with it. I mean, there's certain players in our team that will hopefully be back now because of it, but yeah, I feel weird.
I think it'll benefit us because as much as some of our results, we've grounded out some wins and things, we haven't looked that good, and I really hope that Ange can sort of get them on the training ground and maybe just sort of get back to basics and things. It's 2 weeks pretty much for them to absolutely analyse what they expect is going to come from Arsenal. But I'd also add that Arsenal started to show that they are a little bit frail now.
Yeah,
I have always thought it was Spurs when we've played Europe and gone fairly far in Europe, be that Europa League or Champions League, that balancing the Premier League and that at the same time is extremely difficult.
It is.
And in our history, we've managed to do neither. The amount of times we've been sort of quarterfinals of sort of Europa League.
Yeah, and then
you're trying to balance the Premier League on the Saturday, midweek Europe, and then you've got another match on the Sunday. And you managed to screw up all three matches somehow because you've tried to do everything. I think that's pretty much the situation that Arsenal in. They conceded two very late goals against Villa. They looked off the pace throughout the match, really. Bayern Munich, Bayern have got nothing to play for other than the Champions League. So next week it's going to be exactly the same thing. But Bayern are going to be absolutely up for that. And Arsenal have got three games in a period when they're looking quite tired and potentially they could be knocked out of the Champions League. I don't know how it works fixture-wise, but potentially Man City might be,
I
think they're 2 points ahead. They might be 5 points ahead by the next time that Arsenal play in the Premier League, whatever it might be. Yeah. It's a situation now where, you're saying, I think you said before, they might have momentum.
Yeah.
It could be the absolute opposite.
No, you're right.
It could be that they're dead on the feet. The Premier League's gone for them. The Champions League's gone for them. And then they're travelling away from home to Spurs, who have had 2 weeks off and have literally been concentrating on this match an awful defeat at Newcastle.
My absolute hope is that we turn that stadium into the nasty atmosphere that we did last time and our team are as motivated for it as last time. Because if we're not that, I don't think we win. But I think if we are, I think we really can turn them over and basically kill their season. which is a trophy all by itself. just parking that to one side, just to sort of wrap up then. They play Wolves and they play Chelsea before they play us, in addition to Bayern Munich. It's kind of crazy. But yeah, that's where we're at, and we're focusing on them. Like I said, next week's show, because we don't have a game, is going to be just purely squad transfers and just talking it through, giving our opinions and stuff. Mate, is there anything else you want to chat about while you're on the show?
No, I think knowing that I was going to do the podcast, I thought I was going to be very, very negative, but I kind of mellowed. It's a good job we didn't do it post-match, because yeah, I think you'd have got a different reaction from me. But on the whole, I guess Sunday's results sort of... Man United played late Saturday. Obviously, they dropped points and things. And on the whole, you look at it, you're still 10 points clear of the teams below you. Would have taken this position at the start of the season. Absolutely, we'll take it now. But yeah, let's see what the next couple of results pan out.
Okay, mate. Big thank you to everybody for listening, as always. A big thank you for Dan, Polynesian Dan, for stepping in this week. We will be back, like I said, next week's show is going to be me and Stefan talking our way through the squad. Hopefully you'll join us for that. Keep an eye on the social medias, because we will ask for people's thoughts on it as well. Until then, everybody, you all take care. Dan, I'll give you the final word.
Come on, you Spurs.
Thank you for listening to the Spurs News Podcast. We hope that you enjoyed the show. Stay up to date with all things Tottenham. Follow us on social media. All links are in the podcast description.